And on this half hour of Monitor, you'll hear the exciting story of a young California couple who had a strange encounter with Chinese communists off the coast of China. I'm Bob Wogan, your host this Saturday evening, subbing for Ted Steele. A bit later, all today's sports news. Right now, music. Eddie Fisher, People Like You.
Oh, yes, it's people like you who make life worthwhile for people like me. And that's why people like me fall in love with people like you. It's such a good feeling to wake up and know that somebody's heart goes wherever you go, that somebody's waiting with a sweet caress to bring you happiness. Oh, yes, it's people like you who bring sunny skies to people like me. And that's why people like me lose their hearts to people like you. Life used to be lonely, no roses and wine, but now that's all over since you said you're mine. When somebody loved you, all at once you see how beautiful life can be. Oh, yes, it's people like you who make life worthwhile for people like me. And that's why people like me fall in love with people like you. Oh, yes, it's people like you who make life worthwhile for people like me. And that's why people like me fall in love with people like you. Oh, yes, it's people like you who make life worthwhile for people like me. And that's why people like me fall in love with people like you.
William and Carol Hankey of Newport Beach, California, visited Red China the hard way. They were aboard their 36-foot yacht, the Adventure, on their way from Hong Kong to Taiwan. They were surrounded by Red Chinese junks in the international waters off the Chinese coast on March 18th. Their boat was slightly damaged. NBC News correspondent Wells Hangen picks up the story from there.
The Adventure was towed into the Red Chinese fishing village of Ping Hoi, northeast of Hong Kong, and the Hankeys were subjected to a week's interrogation and political indoctrination by communist officials. On March 26th, they were released and returned under their own sail for repairs in a Hong Kong dockyard. The Hankeys are both high school teachers in Newport Beach, California. They're traveling around the world on a sabbatical leave of absence. Sitting on the after deck of their little vessel, Bill and Carol Hankey related their experiences in Red China.
Bill, tell us what happened in your own words, if you could, please.
Well, we were on a little trip, or it could be aptly known as the Adventure, which is the name of our boat, trying to make a six-month trip from here to our home in Newport Beach, California. Our first port of call would be Kaohsiung, Taiwan. And on our way to Kaohsiung, about 65 miles due east of Hong Kong, we were forcibly apprehended and hauled into a Chinese fishing port. We were 35 miles off the Chinese coast in the international shipping lane. This was confirmed by the Chinese authorities, but according to them, we were in the vicinities of their territorial waters. These two 70-foot junks then forcibly stopped me by hitting me from port starboard beam. A third one come up and damaged the life buoy.
How many people actually boarded your ship, Bill?
I believe there was around 10 or 11. We didn't count heads at the time because The two junks were heavily armed and heavily loaded. There must have been 15 to 20 people on each junk, each armed with either Russian burp guns or ancient Japanese machine guns. And I'm sincere when I say they were all armed, even the young girls and the young boys on the boat. The second boy to get on the boat must not have been over 15 years old and had hand grenades and was threatening with these grenades to throw them into the hatch.
Carol, how did all this affect you?
Well, at the time it happened, I was scared to death. The splintering sounds made when the junks hit was terribly frightening. I didn't know whether to go below for my life jacket to fend off. I was afraid that if I turned around, I might be shot in the back. And I thought at the time, after it was all over, I'm still surprised that no shots were fired, because the people that boarded our boat were so excited and in such a frenzy, and their guns were primed and their hand grenades were ready to go, that it is amazing that nothing really happened. I guess they were much more disciplined than we had thought they were.
Now, when you arrived at Ping Hoi in Chinese territory, how about your contacts with Chinese officials?
They were very official, very courteous. They did nothing to relieve our mind as to our position or our crime. They answered every question of ours with, your question will be taken into consideration. They made the remarks that the matter is being investigated. This is what we heard for the next 3 or 4 days.
Were you questioned at length?
Yes, on particulars such as passport data, our destination, where we'd been, our professions. They acquired all the information we wanted, and we were very helpful to them. They were very courteous to us. At the end of these preliminary discussions every day, there was usually a 2-hour political discussion in which we talked about Mao Thought.
And the Red Book, I see.
The books of China and Mao Zedong.
Did they make any special effort to indoctrinate you?
None whatsoever. It was really, we didn't feel as though we were being indoctrinated. I was concerned that their point of view was so narrow because they obviously had a distorted picture of America, but I couldn't begin to tell them, of course, what America is like, because they wouldn't have believed me anyway. They feel that the working class is downtrodden and oppressed, that our government is, that our bourgeoisie government is composed of only a small minority of the people.
What kind of thing did you see when you were ashore?
I saw a nominal amount of prosperity. The people were happy. Every day we would see them rowing by our boats when the wind wouldn't push the sampans, and they sang while they worked.
Well, Carol, how did you make out during this time cooking the meals? I presume you were responsible for that.
I made that my big chore during the day. Otherwise, I didn't have anything to do, and they offered fresh vegetables, and when they offered the vegetables, we thought, well, we'll try for something else. And we asked for some fish and some pork and some eggs, and they brought all these things. They brought us fresh water every day.
Did they ask you to pay for these?
Oh, no. They would not accept. We offered them cigarettes. We offered them a cup of tea. They would not accept anything from us.
The fishermen would hang for hours on our rail to look over the winches and the compass and the wheel. And, of course, when we would come up on deck, so we couldn't understand English, we could see that there was a genuine appreciation of another man's boat, just as we were very curious at their big fishing junks and their sampans.
Carol, did you have any contact with any of the women or anyone on shore?
Oh, just when I went on board, they would stand and giggle. And I suppose it was very strange to them to see a Western woman, because most of these people were fairly young. They haven't been out of the fishing village. China has been cut off from the rest of the world for so long that probably I was their only contact with a Western woman.
What are your plans now, Bill?
As soon as the boat is completed, and again, the damage is superficial, we'll make our way on to Taiwan and Japan.
Where is your eventual destination?
We have to be back in Newport Beach, California, by September. That's when we both resume teaching.
On Wednesday, the Adventure was pronounced fit and sailed out of Hong Kong Harbor the same day. Bill Hankey says they'll follow an east-southeasterly course that will keep them 45 miles off the Red Chinese coast instead of 35 miles as they were last time. That was a bit too close for comfort. This is Wells Hangen, NBC News, Hong Kong.
An unusual first-hand account of a visit to Red China. Fortunately, the Hankeys are now safely on their way home. Anita Kerr Singer's One in a Row. You are on the Monitor Beacon. At 22 minutes past the hour, here's Monitor Music. Ed Ames sings Bonsoir, Dom.
In a green wood close to our village, a quiet pool lies still and deep. The evening sounds and forest birds have gently lulled my love to sleep. Bonsoir, dame, madame, fais dodo. 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 Softly, birds, and don't awake her. She doesn't know how my heart aches. I've never dared to say I love you. I'll tell her nothing before she wakes. Bonsoir, dame, madame, fais dodo. Bonsoir, dame, madame, fais dodo. Bonsoir, dame. Thank you.
Monitor Sports Desk now, a working colleague of mine, David Kennedy, NBC Sports Coordinator.
Thanks, Bob, and we'll tee off with golf. There's a tie for first place after the third round of the $125,000 Greensboro Open in North Carolina. Deadlocked at 199 are 36-hole leader George Archer, who had a 68 today, and Dave Stockton, who came in with a 65. Their 199 score is 14 under par, two strokes better than the old tournament record for 54 holes, and puts Archer and Stockton six strokes up on Arnold Palmer, Doug Sanders, and Johnny Pott. At Sebring, the Ford Mark IV, driven by Mario Andretti and Bruce McLaren, is the leader after 7 hours of the 12-hour sports car endurance race. In baseball, the Mets and Cards completed a five-player deal. The Mets received infielder Jerry Buchek, also pitcher Art Mahaffey, and infielder Tony Martinez, who are ticketed for Jacksonville. The Cards got infielder Eddie Brasseau, an undisclosed amount of cash, and outfielder Danny Napoleon, destined for Tulsa. The key figures in the trade, Buchek and Brasseau. Cincinnati pitcher Joe Nuxall began a new career today as a member of the Reds broadcasting team. He announced his retirement as a player in a tear-filled scene in Tampa. Nuxall, you may recall, was the youngest player ever to appear in the major leagues. He was 15 when he pitched two-thirds of an inning for Cincinnati back in 1944. He closes out his major league career with a record of 137 victories and 117 losses. Exhibition baseball results. Baltimore beat Pittsburgh 3-1. Boston, 13. New York Yankees, 4. The Chicago Cubs blank California, 6-0. The Chicago White Sox put the whitewash on Detroit, 5-0. Kansas City, 8. Washington, 3. New York Mets, 6. Philadelphia, 3. Atlanta beat Minnesota, 6-1. And Cincinnati shut out St. Louis, 3-0. In college basketball, Bob Stevens resigned as head coach at Oklahoma, apparently under pressure. However, he will remain at the school as a member of the physical education staff. A successor to Stevens is expected to be announced next week. In Lexington, Kentucky, Sonny Dove of St. John's tossed in 26 points to pace the Eastern Collegiate All-Stars to a 102-93 victory over the West. The game produced a mystery. Whatever happened to Jimmy Walker of Providence? He accepted an invitation to play, but failed to appear. In pro basketball, the New American Association shifted its Kansas City franchise to Denver, and a conditional franchise, the league's 12th, was awarded to Milwaukee. In the NBA tonight, game two of the best of seven Western Division finals, it's St. Louis at San Francisco. The Warriors lead 1-0. On the turf, the $100,000 added Florida Derby at Gulfstream Park was won by In Reality, early fires in the saddle. At Aqueduct, Advocator led R. Michael and Model Fool across the finish line in the $50,000 added Westchester. In bowling, Jim Stefanich won the $25,000 first prize in the $100,000 Akron Pro Bowlers Association tournament. He beat Don Johnson in a two-frame roll-off, and there was a perfect 300 thrown by third-place finisher Jack Biondolillo. He picked up an extra $10,000 for that. That's the late sports news, Bob. This is David Kennedy.
Thank you, David. Sports news and scores every weekend on Monitor. Hold Me, played by Burt Camford. Monitor on NBC Radio across the country. In Erie, Pennsylvania, you hear us on WWYN. Wherever you're listening, there's more to come shortly. This is Bob Wogan.
Monitor, going places this weekend on the NBC Radio Network.
Green, green, the green field way, you keep your lawn in front. Green, green, the green field way, to save a lot of work and time.
The National Safety Council presents the Defensive Driving Game. The rules: obey traffic laws, adjust to conditions of road and weather, keep the car in shape, and please give the other guy a break.
Want to know the score? Bill Mazur will tell you right off the bat, weeknights at 5 on the Big Voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
This is Monitor, where you'll hear the answer to the question, how do you speak to a pheasant? Now, that may not be a question you ask every day of the week, but this is Saturday night, and we like to bring you something unusual. I'm Bob Wogan, sitting in for your regular host, Ted Steele. Al Capp will speak out after the Sinatras sing a little song. It's Frank and Nancy with Something Stupid.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. Then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. light. Your perfume fills my head. The stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you. I love you.
Monodus talking cartoonist Al Capp will now prove once again that a word is worth a thousand pictures, provided, of course, that the words are well chosen. Your choice, Al.
The demonstrations protesting the punishment by the University of Florida of student Pamela Brewer for posing in the nude for an off-campus magazine shouldn't have surprised anyone. It was the inevitable result of our long national do-as-you-darn-please orgy that has intoxicated our kids with a sense of absolute freedom. Now, this is no act of love by parents and college faculties. It's an act of sloth, scorn, and neglect. It's so much less work for parents or college faculties to let kids do anything they want to do than to discipline and guide them. It's much less work to do nothing to prevent our adolescents turning into panders, pornographers, and exhibitionists than to do something to make them ladies and gentlemen. The do-as-you-darn-please parents and college faculties are immensely admired for being liberal instead of being detested for being criminally negligent. And so this generation of kids whose bodies are more developed than their brains destroy and mutilate those bodies by the hundreds of thousands in cars because they haven't the experience or stability to drive properly, and because they haven't parents with guts enough to forbid them to until they have. Teenage girls whose bodies have developed into womanliness but whose brains are still flea size permit apprentice campus pornographers to peddle peeps at their nakedness at newsstands and pool rooms. Pamela Brewer's lawyer won a cheer from the courtroom audience of students when he said that she had every right to pose naked and offer the pictures for sale in the magazine because there was nothing in the rules of behavior given out by the university that said it was wrong. If Miss Brewer's next prank is setting fire to the college infirmary, she can use the same defense. And this is Al Capp speaking to you on NBC's Monitor.
And you have every right to cheer Al Capp or to protest what he says weekends on Monitor. Here's Gogie Grant and her latest, The Sea.
My man is a handsome sailing man, the captain of his crew. He goes with the sea to distant lands, and he stays a year or two. I have his name, I wear his ring, but I found from the start, so I keep my vows and keep his house, the she-sea keeps his heart. Oh, the sea